Hello, and welcome to For the Love of Truth. This is episode 240. In this episode, I want to explore something with you. Since the very start of this great scam and everything else it's going to turn out to be, I've been looking at it and trying to work out why does it feel to me like people are walking around in a trance or under a spell or an incantation or something like that. And those are the words and the feelings that I was getting from this. Last night, I got an email from a man called Brian that shed some considerable light on something that has been going on, and I wanted to share it with you. And he sent me this email. I've been a professional hypnotist for 25 plus years and used to be a full-time stage hypnotist. I was shocked when the pandemic first kicked off, as I realized the government were using almost the exact same techniques I was using working theaters. A few months ago, I did a Facebook Live breaking down the psychological manipulation used. You might find it interesting. I did find it very interesting, which is why I wanted to share it with you, and I'd suggest it's something you might want to have a good look at and maybe share it with other people as well. And I hope it sheds some light on how people's behavior is being manipulated so that we can also take steps to interrupt these patterns and break this spell that is being cast across us. You guys are amazing, and I'll see you in the next video. Take care of yourselves. Bye-bye.
Right, so COVID propaganda and hypnosis exposed. I'll talk a little bit about that while a few more people are jumping in. And the reasons I wanted to put this presentation together tonight was because when this all kicked off about a year ago, I was absolutely amazed to see. I couldn't believe what was unfolding before my eyes. From the very first moment this media campaign kicked off, it was obvious to me that the government were using the exact same tactics and techniques that I had been using in my stage hypnosis shows way back in the early 90s. In fact, for the first couple of days, I was walking about with a huge grin on my face, and people were the opposite. They were full of fear and terror. And in actual fact, I got attacked with a few friends who thought I was actually smiling at people's distress. But in actual fact, I just couldn't believe what was unfolding behind me. So that's the first reason why I want to put this presentation together, because I want to share it with you, with everybody. The second reason I want to put this presentation together is because this last year and a half has caused so much anxiety, so much suffering, and I've seen it in groups, I've experienced it personally with friends and family, I've seen it all around me that it's tearing us apart. This COVID propaganda is tearing us apart, and big part of it is the divide and conquer. And so the second outcome I'm hoping to get for you tonight is, by understanding how this propaganda works, it allows you to be a little bit more detached and relaxed, and it stops you. I want it to be able to help you to heal this division between you, your friends and your family, or at least calm it down a little bit and have a little bit more control of your lives. So that's the two reasons why I want to do this. Before I do it, so why should you listen to me? So I'll tell you a little bit of my background. I've been involved in hypnosis. Well, I've been interested in hypnosis all my life. I first started learning how to hypnotise when I was about 10 or 11 year old from a little book I got out of the back of a comic strip. Had about two or three pages in it, and I would go to school and get into a lot of trouble trying to hypnotise my friends quite badly. Also went to art college when I was about 18, and when I left, I worked in advertising for quite a few years as a freelancer. And what I would do is I would be a visualizer, and my job was to go in and work with the art directors and the copywriters and help them produce the really slick presentation materials so they could go out and pitch and get win the big contracts. So, for example, I would do storyboards for TV commercials. I would do storyboards for print ad campaigns, that kind of thing. And way back in the old days, we didn't have computers, so it was all done with magic markers. It was all done by hand. But I didn't get into stage hypnosis until professionally until the early 90s, and that's when I started with the stage hypnosis. So you could say that I've spent most of my adult life, or most of my life, trying to work out how to get people to do things. So the big thing that really impressed me when I got involved in the stage hypnosis, when I got into the 90s, I became quite successful, and I would regularly perform in front of audiences of 1,000 or more. And the big thing that really impressed me back then was, in fact, I became obsessed by it, was the fact if you take a group of people through a simple process or a ritual and you structure your language in a specific way, you could have a profound impact upon their perceptions. You could make them see things that weren't there. You could make them not be able to see things that were there. You could remove all their inhibitions and make them behave in kinds of ways they would never dream of. But the biggest thing that really impressed me, and even to this day, is that most of the people who'd been up on stage with me for a full 2 hours couldn't remember a single thing. They had complete amnesia for the whole experience. And to this day, that is still something that has an impact on me. But as the years went by, I moved away from stage hypnosis. And the longer I was away from stage hypnosis, I started to realise that what you see on stage is nothing special. It's a process that happens every single day in our day-to-day daily activities. And the words that we use and the way we structure them and the rituals that we go through every day have a profound impact upon us and the people around us and how they perceive us. And so there, what happened was I then went on to work with companies. And the first thing, one of my very first clients was a national Mercedes-Benz dealership, and I helped him break sales records in only 2 days, especially selling the add-ons, which was something that the sales trainers previously couldn't do in 2 years. And one of the things that really struck me when I started working with businesses were that a lot of businesses were losing out in hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of contracts just because of one or two words and habitual, what seemed like innocent phrases. They were having the wrong impression on the people they were trying to do business with. Another client around that time was a major children's charity. It was Bernardo's. And I helped him move a £240,000 corporate donation to a £1 million commitment in a single meeting with just a few words and phrases. So I then went on to work with all kinds of businesses. I worked with media companies. I worked with financial advisors. I worked with recruitment agencies. I've worked with all kinds of companies, and during that time I've helped them generate literally millions of pounds worth of contracts, although I haven't been in that recently. So when I talk about the word hypnosis, some people have a problem with hypnosis. I don't think about hypnosis like the majority of hypnotists do or the public, because I think hypnosis is with us every single day, every hour of the day. And I believe that we're constantly in a trance. Just like a fish can't live out of water, we can't actually live. We can't live. Hold on. Right. Okay. So we can actually live out of a trance for any long period. Now, if it makes it easier, there's other ways of thinking hypnosis. I've actually heard it being called a heightened imagination. That's a really good definition. It makes it simpler. I would like to add one other word to that. I'll call it heightened emotions and imagination, for reasons we're going to discover shortly. But if we go back to this idea and this notion of everyday trance, if you look up the dictionary definition of trance, all it really means is to focus inward. So that's a really simple definition of trance. So if you think of it this way, right, we have our five senses, we have our visuals, we have our auditory, our ability to feel, we have our kinesthetics, and we also have taste and smell. But I'm only going to talk about the three main ones at the moment. So we have these three main ones, and we have a visual internally, we have a visual externally, we have an auditory internally, and we have an auditory externally, and we have a kinesthetic feel. We can feel emotions inside, and we can touch and feel things in the outside world. And what that means, for example, right now, you could close your eyes right now, right? And you could imagine me with a big bushy moustache. You could open your eyes and you could still imagine me with a bushy moustache. So you can actually open your eyes and you can project your internal visualizations onto your externals. You can also hear me talk. You can hear me talk. You could actually close your eyes and imagine what it would be like to speed my voice up. You could imagine music in the background as you listen to my voice. You can open your eyes and you can still keep that going. You can imagine I've got a Mexican hat on my head. You could imagine I'm standing in front of your front door, which I imagine for a few of you would be quite a terrifying prospect. So anyway, so it's the same with feelings, right? You can have all these feelings inside, but you can also touch solid things outside. You could close your eyes and go inside and remember what it's like to stroke a dog. So you can imagine what it's like to stroke a dog inside. And you can also imagine what it's like to stroke a dog with no hair that's been shaved. So you can also have these constructs. And what's actually happening from moment to moment is, well, we have what's called uptime and downtime. So uptime is when all your senses are focused externally. And we have downtime when all your senses are focused inwards. But they tend to cross over. So, for example, at any one moment, you are probably going back into your head and you're making references to things in the past to try and make sense of what I'm saying to you right now. And then you come back out again and you project some of that into the outside world. And that's where the problems start, because we are constantly going in and out all the time, in and out of trance all the time. And what we are seeing, the reality that we are seeing, is a construct. It's coming from inside ourselves. It's not coming from inside. And that's the basic idea behind trance. So hold on a second. Right, so this might be a good place to talk a little bit about emotion, because emotion is going to be really, really important. Emotion is whenever you're in a peak state emotion, whatever you see outside yourself becomes a trigger for that emotion. Whatever you see, hear or touch. And we're always setting up triggers all the time. And this is going to be a really important thing as we actually start to move into the propaganda later on. And I'm going to show you how all these emotional triggers and these trances have been set up. Right, so we're going to split this into three sections. The first section is I'm going to show one or two clips from my old shows, and I'm going to break down the mechanics behind them. I'm going to reveal all the psychological manipulation, and I'm going to point certain things out to you. The second part of the program is we're going to look at some of the propaganda that's been going around, and hopefully by that time it will be starting to jump out at you, it'll be screaming out of you, and you'll be able to recognize and see exactly what's been happening. And then in the final part of the program, what I'm going to try and do in the short time that I'm doing is I'm going to try and offer some sort of solutions that can help pull you out of this trance, and also start healing these divisions between you and your family, and also getting rid of some of this anxiety and being able to sort of just operate a lot more effectively in the world. So that's what we're going to do. So what we'll do now is we'll look at some clips, and we'll see, we'll look at some clips, and we'll get started. Okay, press the wrong button there. Still getting used to this technology. It's going to take me a little while before I become really slick. Right, so I'm going to show you this clip here. If you've been on my feed, you've probably seen it quite a few times by now, because I've actually showed it quite a lot. I'm going to show you it one more time, and then I'm going to go into the mechanics behind it.
Touch on the shoulder.
Thank you.
Okay, so that's a rapid induction, as we call them in hypnosis, in the hypnosis world. But what you'll notice is it looks like I've just walked up, touched them on the shoulder, and everybody's just crumbled into a deep unconscious state. But what you have to realise is there's a whole process behind that to get people to that point where I can actually just walk up and just touch them and allow them to just go into a deep unconscious state. We're going to explain and I'm going to break that down, and then I'm going to going to compare that with some of the stuff that's been happening with the propaganda. So what would normally happen with a show would be about 6 weeks before the show started, I would have these big bright day glow posters, and I would go out and for 6 weeks we would fly post them everywhere close to a venue, absolutely everywhere, and we would constantly go out putting these posters up, and we'd also put adverts in the paper. And the idea behind this is the actual hypnotic process has already started. We're starting to build the expectation, and we're starting to build up the emotional state, which I'm going to explain to you the reason why in a moment. So this goes on for about 6 weeks. Then on the actual night, the audience start to fill up seats, and I'm supposed to go on about midnight. And what happens is I don't go on. I don't go on until 10 past, quarter past, 20 past sometimes. And the reason why I'm doing that is I'm trying to create confusion and chaos. So just when people think I'm about to go on, the lights go out, and the whole auditorium is in total darkness. It's so dark that you can't actually see the person next to you. And this I leave them like this for another few minutes. And the reason why I'm doing this is I'm actually building up their emotional state. I'm building up their excitement. I'm building up their fear. And then we put on the creepy music and then the strobe lights. And then by the time I walk on, everybody is in such a really heightened state of emotion, and their imaginations are already running wild. Now, this makes the reason why I do this, right, is whenever you get people into a high peak emotional state, they become highly suggestible. That's a clue that we're going to go into with the propaganda. But if you are in a highly emotional state, then your mind is wide open to suggestion. And that's why when we used to do the stage shows, that's exactly why we did it. So I'm now on stage, and my next part of the process is I want to introduce a ritual. And in fact, this whole thing is a ritual. Going to the theatre, seeing the posters, it's a ritual anyway. But I want to start introducing a ritual. So the first thing a hypnotist will do normally is a hand clasp, like so, right? So they'll do a hand clasp, and they'll get everybody to put their hands tightly together. They'll get them to close their eyes, and then I'll say something like, when I count to 10, your hands will get tighter and tighter with every count, and when I reach 10, many of you will find that your hands will be tightly locked together, and the harder you try to pull them apart, the more difficult they will become. Now, what I've just done is I've just told them what I'm going to do. This is another important thing that is going to come up in the propaganda, which I'll explain to you in a moment. It's called psychological priming. So you've just actually, in a really highly suggestible state, already run that through your mind. You've rehearsed that through your mind, so that's called priming. So then we actually do it. And then what you will find, if you're a stage hypnotist, there will be quite a lot of people in the audience who can't get their hands apart. And they're the ones that you want to choose for the show. So we then get them onto the stage, and I also get them to stand in a line. Now, I don't know if you've not if you've thought about this, but when I get people to stand in a line like you see there, it's very similar to social distancing. When people have to stand in a shop, and they have to stand to wait to get into a shop, and they have to stand on these circles once they're in the shop. So again, it's a similar ritual to what you're seeing now in the propaganda. I then get them to focus on their hands, and then I simply suggest to them that that I'm going to come up and touch them on the shoulder, and that some of them will be hypnotized so quickly all we'll have to do is just touch them, and they'll fall into deep sleep. So that's the process. From getting them to see the poster all the way through to where they are now. And I believe right now, at the time of making this video, that that's where we are with the propaganda, right? The propaganda for the last year or so has all been about getting people to this place right now so that they fall about like flies and they take the vaccination, because That seems to be the main outcome in the government right now. They want, for whatever reason, I'll leave you to make up your mind, but they want everybody to take this vaccination. And it's happening, because I know people who said they would never take the vaccination, and they're just falling about like flies hitting the ground, and they're taking it. And so this is basically where we are. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take you through a few more clips, and I'm going to get you to notice some really, really important things that you really need to know. But if you think about it, before I go, the whole idea of this part of the process is to create chaos. And if you think about what the government has done over this last year or so, it's it keeps moving the goalposts, it keeps promising things, it keeps taking them back again, it keeps putting out all this scary propaganda, which we're going to get into. And another thing that it does is it actually keeps putting these really crazy restrictions out, which don't make any sense whatsoever. And the reason that they're doing that is to create chaos. Because when you create chaos, what actually happens is you smash up the frame, if you like, of reality. So what's happening is all the sort of perimeters that you have, all the things that you cling on to give you a sense of reality, is smashed away. So your mind is searching for to get out of this confusion. And so if you could imagine, for example, you have a drowning man in the sea, it doesn't matter what's on that boat. If he's drowning and you throw him a rope and pull him in, he's going to take it. He won't even look at what's going to happen when he gets on the boat. And that is a hypnotic technique. If you can induce confusion and then you offer a way out of that confusion, the chances are a lot of people are going to take it. So that's that. Oops. I'll get used to this technology eventually. Right, this video I'm going to show you here, right, most people think that the coronavirus started last year, but in actual fact, the first person with coronavirus happened 10 years ago at our 21st birthday party, which I did for a favour. And so here's the very first coronavirus case in Scotland.
The harder you try to speak, the more frustrated you'll become, and I'll just be real bad Chinese. 1, 2, 3, right away. Can't help yourself, you just start going, you can't stop talking. You say exactly what's in your mind in Chinese.
That you need to notice in this clip is, first thing is, just by suggestion I can make somebody really angry. I can obviously affect their ability to speak, but another really important thing is I can actually get them to physically stick to a seat. And this is really important. If you're a stage hypnotist, then you need to put safeties in place, because if you're getting somebody, you're winding them up and then you're making them angry and you don't have some kind of constraint, then it could end up physical, it could end up with violence. So this is the one thing to really notice here, is that you can actually, just through suggestion alone, stick somebody physically to a chair.
She's laughing at you. and she went awake. What's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? Fucking book. Fucking book. Fucking hell. What about you? What's wrong? What? Hot. What's wrong? Fucking ass.
Okay. Right, so the thing to take away from that clip, not only can you stick somebody to the chair with a suggestion, you can also make somebody extremely angry. You can elicit really strong emotional states. And again, we're going to really understand the importance of these emotional states a bit later on. The other thing is you can stick them to their bum to the chair. You can stop them physically doing anything. And you can also, just through suggestion alone, get people to experience pain. You can get people to experience pain. And this is how powerful suggestion can actually be. So we're going to go into the next one now. Right, okay. And I'm going to take that a little bit forward to where I want it to be. Right, we'll do it here. Well, these were the best sheep I ever had. That kind of stuff, so realistic sounds.
What do you think of them? Well, guys, come on, we'll get out of fucking idiots. Would you go to the pool? Nah, let me just tell them. You're not fucking stupid.
To notice about that clip is, so in the first clip we use direct suggestion, we use verbal suggestions to make the trans phenomena happen. On this one, if you notice, when we did the sheep shagging scene, I know it's not the classiest show, but these types of shows really show how far you can push people, and it's a really good way to show the power of suggestion, hypnosis, whatever you want to call it. But what I want you to notice is that Paul, the guy on the stage, seemed he just seemed wide awake and normal. And when I asked him about the people on the stage pretending to be sheep, you could see he ridiculed them. But all I had to do was make the noise, bah, bah, and he became a sheep shagger and he did what he did. And so you can use direct suggestion or you can use noises, bah, for example, as triggers. And so the thing to realise here is that what we are doing is we're setting up, these are what are called contingent suggestions. And what that basically means is that one event will be contingent on the other. So, for example, we can hypnotists quite often make everyday events contingent upon triggering an effect. And one of the most common things that you will hear if you ever go to see a hypnotherapist, you'll hear something along the lines like, they might say something like, with every breath I take and every word I speak, you just find yourself going deeper and deeper and deeper. So what you're doing is you're making the behavior going deeper into trance contingent with breathing and with hearing the words from the hypnotist. And this is really important because contingent suggestions are exactly what's being used over and over and over with the propaganda, as you're about to discover. Now, this is probably a good place to just talk a little bit more about emotions. When you're in a peak emotional state, right, your mind is wide open, right, and whatever is happening, this could be a good state or a bad state, but whatever is happening outside yourself or a combination, either something you can see, hear or touch, or a combination of the three, will then become a trigger later on for that state. So, for example, imagine driving your car and on the radio, an old song comes on from the days you used to go to the nightclubs and you're a bit younger. Immediately, what you'll find is that all these memories and feelings will come flooding back into your body. Or maybe a friend will phone you up and you hear his voice and it's the first time you've heard from him for years and years. All the old memories and the feelings will come flooding back into your body. Now, that's an example of a really pleasant, positive emotion. But it can go the other way as well. Imagine if you were at a funeral and you had lost somebody who was really close, you were really close to. You'd obviously be in a peak emotional state, but it would be a very negative state. So for imagine you were at the funeral and somebody came up to you and just touched you on the shoulder like that and says, I'm really sorry to hear about your loss. I'm really sorry to hear about your loss. And then they touch you again. Somebody else comes up and touches you and says, I'm really sorry to hear about your loss. Now, that only has to happen two or three times. And now, whether you realise it or not, you've just set up a trigger in your shoulder. So it could be a year down the line when you've completely got over this this loss. And then when you're just going about doing your normal everyday business, somebody comes up to you and says, hi there, I've not seen you for ages. How are you doing? And all of a sudden, without realising it, you just feel like crying or you feel really depressed and you don't even know why. And so these triggers are being set up all the time, all the time. And so when you think about what's happening right now, right, the government is putting out this mainstream media propaganda that's designed to keep you in a state of fear. So first of all, I remember the very first night when Boris came on the TV, and what happened was he said that everybody in the land is going to lose somebody close to them and their family. And he said that there was going to be 500,000 deaths and 8 million people in the hospital. Right away, that was a red flag to me, because if this government was really wanting to help us, guide us safely through a crisis like this pandemic, then they would have kept everybody calm. But they did the opposite. They were winding everybody up and they were instilling them with fear. And ever since that beginning of the propaganda, they've just compounded that. They've been relentless, piling on the fear. And the reason why they want you in a fear state is because you become much more suggestible to all the other stuff that they're putting in your head, and the compounding effect that it has over a period of time. Now, the other thing, of course, is you're putting masks on, you're going outside. This pandemic is invisible, so they have to make it theatrical. So you have to put a mask on, everybody has to wear a mask, everybody has to stand outside or stand apart in shops. You've also got the auditory triggers where you get the posh voices, almost futuristic voices from science fiction movies coming through the tannoys telling you that you must wash your hands, that you must wear a mask. And so what's actually happening is, as you're going outside when you're in a state of fear, all these things are becoming triggers to lock that in. So, for example, whenever you go out and you see people with a mask and you're in a state of fear, seeing people in the future will trigger off that fear. Standing in the queue will trigger off that fear. In fact, pretty much after a short period of time, everywhere you go and everything you do will trigger off the fear, because all these contingent suggestions, all these triggers have been set up in your environment. And so that is, that's the reason why they want to keep you in this state of fear. Now, what's also happened is we've also had this divide and conquer aspect, where we have one part of the population is totally bought into all this mainstream media. They've totally bought into all the propaganda and all the daily death rates that's been served up every single day on the TV. And then on the other side of the spectrum, we've got all the we've got the other side of it. All these people that are walking away and shutting down mainstream media and doing their own research and looking at facts and looking at their own research, and they've got a completely different view of what's actually happening. So the people who have a different view, they think they are awake, but in actual fact, they're just as asleep as the people on the other side. I'm going to just leave that there right now, because we're going to get that into more depth a little bit later. But what I would like to say right at this moment is, if you are finding that you are either on one side or the other of the spectrum, and you are having a lot of anxiety and a lot of anger. I know, for example, I know a lot of people who are really worried about members of the family taking the vaccine, and it's causing huge arguments trying to stop them. And then the other side, their family members, they're really angry by trying to get them to change to their point of view. What you have to realise is that both these sides are in a trance, because you're in a highly emotional state. You're not thinking clearly. When I do work with my clients and I teach them persuasion, the first thing I teach them is that there is a sender and a receiver. And what I mean by that is that when you are trying to, if I was to try and sell you something, right, the first thing I would want to do is I would want to make you feel good, because people only buy things because it feels good. That's the only reason that they buy things. And so if you've ever been in front of a salesperson, for example, and they're selling you something that you know you want, and logically it all makes sense, but it just doesn't feel right. The reason that doesn't feel right is because that salesperson has been anxious about the sale. And what he's done is he's transferred those feelings to you. You've picked them up and you don't buy them. So what's actually happening when you have two family members or two friends going in and trying to change each other's point of views, you get angrier and angrier, until all you're actually doing is you're sending anger backwards and forwards, and you aren't thinking things clearly, and it's just escalating and getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So really what you need to do is you need to come out of these anger trances, calm things down. And when you do that, what you'll actually find is the other person that you're dealing with, they'll calm down as well, and both of you will be able to think more clearly. We're going to go a wee bit more into that, into the third part of the programme, but I just thought that would be a good place to introduce it. So this is the next clip.
Thank you. cocaine.
Right, now the thing I want you to get from that clip is, right, we've had verbal suggestions to induce anger, stick people to chairs, make them speak Chinese. We've used noises like ba to bring about trance behaviour when somebody appears to be wide awake in every sense of the word. And now in that clip, we've used music to create the triggers. So whenever anybody hears a certain type of music, they go into trance. Right. I guess a really good thing to compare that would be at Christmas time. You know, when you go into the shops and you hear the Christmas tunes and the carols or whatever, all of a sudden you go into a festive mood, you feel good, and you buy more stuff. That's the idea behind that. So now we're hearing different things in shops. We're hearing voices. We're seeing things. So all these things, when you go out into the outside world now, be aware that they're deliberate. They are actual triggers to keep you locked into this high state, this high intense state of emotions. Because that's where they want you to be. So that's what I want you to think about. The other thing I want you to think about here is, if you notice these guys in the bath, right, when the music stops and they're awake, right, these guys have not got a clue what's happening. Because a lot of people say, yeah, people that get up on stage, they're just people that are, they just go along with it. But I'm telling you, I've done this for a long time. And when you wake these people up and they realise what they're doing, they have not got a clue as to what's happening to them. And sometimes though, you can't actually convince certain people. I remember one of my last shows that I did, we did the striptease at the end, and I had about four or five guys who all had black underpants. And somebody shouted up and says, look, they're plants. Look at them. They've all got black pairs of underpants. As if I would go out and buy sets of matching underpants for my volunteers. But some people can't get that into their heads. But I really want to emphasise that, right? This is really powerful. You can almost get some people to do almost anything if you can get them into the right mental state using some of the psychological manipulation that I've been speaking to you about. So just one more, just for purely for fun, and then we're going to get onto the serious stuff. So there we are. So that's the clips that that I'm just going to show you tonight. And now I'm going to actually move on to the propaganda, and hopefully things will start to make sense and they'll start to jump out at you. Oops. Right, so this is the first one here. As you can see, act like you've got it. The new COVID-19 variant is spreading fast. We all have to play our part to stop the spread. Now, look at that headline, act like you've got it. Now remember, you've been exposed to weeks, if not months, of this propaganda, this fear-inducing propaganda, so you're in a high emotional state, just like the people that are on stage. Also, I want you to notice that the colour of the posters, red and yellow, they're all designed to keep you in a high state of alert. So act like you've got it. It's just like me saying, act like a sheep shagger. I know it sounds crazy, but if half the population is in this high state of fear and anxiety, and they're being exposed to suggestions like that, there is a really good chance that they will act as if they've got it. The other thing as well is, when you're in a high emotional state, your emotions become lenses, and you look through these lenses and you see the world through these lenses. So if they've got you into a high state of fear, you're looking at the world differently. You're seeing all these things that they're suggesting. You're actually seeing them. You're actually seeing the world as a deadly, dangerous place. And if you get told to act like you've got it while you're in that state, then there's a really good chance that you're going to do it. Also, look at the up here in the corner, you'll see we've got the NHS logo. The NHS logo is a highly emotive charged symbol. We've spent most of our lives being brought up to respect and revere the NHS, but also the politicians have also installed fear of losing the NHS. So at the bottom, it's got stay home, protect the NHS, save lives. Right, these are really powerful suggestions, and you're going to see that these are the suggestions that are delivered to us through the propaganda over and over and over again. So look at this bit here, stay home. Now, if you think about the guy on the chair who was speaking Chinese, he couldn't get out the chair because I told him he couldn't get out the chair. I told him he was stuck to the chair. Stay home, stay home, stay home. People were staying at home. It was a way of keeping people in a mental prison, if you like, a mental lockdown. And of course, protect the NHS. And I know that in the first lockdown alone, there was 26,000 people died because they didn't get NHS emergency treatment. In fact, most of the excess deaths, if you actually go and look at them on the ONS, you'll actually find that they are from the people who stayed at home and didn't get treatment for heart attacks, diabetes, they didn't get treatment for strokes, or they were one of the suicide casualties. So that's just something to keep in mind there. Oops, I'll go back one. So how did I go back? Oops. Right, okay. So here's another one. Again, I want you to look at the colour scheme. I want you to see the colour scheme, red, yellow, bright. It screams out high alert, it screams out anxiety, it screams out fear, okay? So this one is coronavirus, you got symptoms, get tested. High temperature or new continuous cough or loss of smell, taste or smell. Now, what this is doing, right, I don't know about you, but I've had colds, I've had flus all my life, I've had all these symptoms. Last 2 years I changed my diet to vegan and not had a cold, but I've had years where I've had really bad colds and flus and I've experienced all these symptoms. So what they're doing is, this is a contingent suggestion. And what I mean by that is they're taking everyday events and they're making that contingent with getting tested, with being in this high alert emotional state of fear, where whenever you experience a cough or you see somebody in the family with a cough, it's triggering off this state of fear where at any time you could die or at any time you could make your granny die or whatever. And this is what's behind it. And at the bottom, this was an experiment. This went on for a little while, but they went back to the old strapline. Stay alert, control lives. Sorry, control the virus, save lives. And again, we have the NHS logo at the top there. So here's another one, stay home, save lives. Again, look at the colour scheme, it's the same colours, all designed to elicit, to drag out of you an emotional state of high alert, right? So stay home. Again, remember the guy stuck to the chair. Stay home, the guy stuck to the chair. People are stuck at home. Protect the NHS, save lives. And there's another one with an old person. This has affected me personally because my mother's been in care through this whole time and she's really suffered like many other people. So it's stay home. This is a bank holiday weekend. So it sounds like to me they're just trying to make you absolutely miserable and put your friends and family, don't put your friends and family in danger. So this is the contingent suggestion to stop you going to see your mother or your grandmother, etc., etc. So again, these are attempts to set up these triggers to make everyday events contingent with this state of high alert, this fear trance, if you like, where you're putting these lenses on and you're looking through them and you're seeing the world as a dangerous place. Stay home, protect the NHS, save lives. Catch-ups cause lives. Again, an everyday behaviour, going out to see your friends, they're trying to make that contingent again with, I suppose, killing people. If you're saying saving lives, It's trying to make you visualize. It's trying to make you see you going back home and spreading this imaginary virus and killing all the all your family and all your friends. And again, stay home, protect the NHS, save lives. And you've probably seen this time and time again, over and over. Now you think about it, it's everywhere. It's in the media, it's on the radio, it's in the car, it's everywhere. Now here we are, we're really starting to get a bit theatrical now. The NHS logo again, but now we're starting to wear visors. We've got visors and a mask, and it's really, really getting dramatic now. Same again, look at the colour scheme, the reds, the yellows, it's the same thing over and over again. You could be spreading it without knowing it. Well, there you go, eh? You could be spreading it without knowing it. So again, this is all about keeping you in this high state of alert, in this fear trance. That's it. That's what it's all about. Oops, go back for a minute. Around 1 in 3 people with COVID-19 don't have any symptoms, but can still pass it on. Well, there's no scientific evidence for asymptomatic carriers. There just isn't. And it's the first time in medical history that we've actually quarantined healthy people, but you can make up your own mind about that. And again, at the bottom, stay home, protect the NHS, save lives. Now, this is one of my posters that I did during the festival. And right away, you can see, look at the colour scheme. Oh, sorry. If you look at the colour scheme, right, that could have been designed by the same person. When I was working with my graphic designer, I mean, different stage hypnotists have different ways of doing it, different ways of presenting themselves. I used to always like to present the scary hypnotist and get people into this really excitable state of fear. That was just the way I loved to do it. And the whole idea behind this was to create this kind of godlike Big Brother type person, I suppose. And as you can see, it's very, very similar. Oops, sorry. It's very, very similar. And that was one of the first things that stuck in my mind when I seen those posters. So here's another piece of propaganda. It's quite a nasty piece. On here, it's one of these infrared shots where it shows up all the germs, because they have to do that, because you can't see these things, of course. You can't see this virus. They have to make it visual in some way. So it says here, wash your hands, don't touch your face, right? To prevent infection, keep your hands away from your face, eyes, nose and mouth. Right, now, think about this, right? If you've got a little kid and you're walking along the street and you see a puddle and you tell that kid not to jump in the puddle, what does the kid do? It jumps in the puddle, right? And that's just because generally we don't actually process negatives. We don't process the word don't. So it's basically a suggestion saying wash your hands, touch your face. But here's the thing, right? Touching your face and your nose and all that kind of stuff is it's nothing wrong with that. It's a normal everyday event anyway. So what it's basically doing is it's actually taking another everyday event that you're going to do anyway and you can't not do, we just do it. And what it's doing, it's making you hyper aware of it. So now when you touch your face and you do things without even realizing, you wouldn't give it normally give it a second thought, you're now becoming hyper aware of it. And every time you touch it, it's becoming a contingent suggestion. It's becoming a trigger. It's triggering off that trance again. Am I going to kill somebody? Am I going to, am I going to become ill? Am I going to transmit to somebody else? And all these images that are running about inside this fear trance, they're triggered over and over and over again. And so even if you wear a mask, it's going to make it worse because you touch yourself more anyway when you've got a mask. So these are all designed to lock the trance in so that you can't escape it everywhere you go. That's what all these bits and pieces of propaganda are designed to do. And again, at the bottom, stay home, protect the NHS, save lives. Now, this is an interesting one. We must keep on protecting each other. Okay, hands, face, space. Hands, face, space. Hands, face, space. This is a ritual. If you remember in the beginning of the session, when I showed you the video with people on the stage, I spoke about how the thing that really amazed me was if you take people through a simple process, in other words, a ritual, and structure your language in a certain way, you can have a profound impact on their perceptions. Well, this is what this is. It's just like a ritual. It's a ritual that's no different to what happens on the stage. In fact, we go through rituals every single day of our lives. For example, you get married, you become a father. These are rituals, and what these rituals do, they open doorways to other way, to new ways at looking at the world. And so if you become a father, all of a sudden you become, you see the world differently and you become more responsible. Or a mother, don't want to be sexist, or a mother, but you basically become more responsible. You grow up, you change the way you see the world. So we go through these rituals all the time. So another ritual would be voting, for example. When you actually go voting and the whole country goes out and casts their votes, it's just another collective ritual. It's just a way of opening a doorway into your perceptions to allow the construct and the idea of government to become reality to you. But in reality, it only exists in our minds. It's just another trance. Also, the police, when they, well, for example, if you go back, the actual act of putting a mask on your face is a ritual, and it changes the way you see the world. And also the police, if you are a police person and you put the uniform, the actual act of putting a police uniform is a ritual. The minute you put that uniform on and go through the training, then you see the world differently. And this is a really great example of that here, which I'm going to show you.
I'm just going to introduce myself as a police liaison officer. So the purpose of having this dialogue...
Excuse me, sir. Just before you do, I'm hearing impaired and I find the masks very difficult.
I'm not going to remove my mask because
I'm sorry.
I will raise my voice and I believe that you can hear me from there.
I can hear you. But I do lip read a bit of it as well. I'm hearing impaired, so... It does make it more difficult for me to understand what you're saying.
I'm going to withdraw a little bit, change my mask, because I've got a different type of mask. This mask has a higher protection rate and will allow me to get within 2 metres of you, so safely. And then I can raise my voice. I have been in this situation before. I'm prepared to raise my voice. It's not in an aggressive manner, but in a way so that I can communicate more effectively. But by doing that, it has, in the past, my experience has shown that just by raising my voice, that simple act, means I can be clear. And if you can hear me say that now, I think this is going to be effective.
Okay.
So let me just do that now. So the purpose
I couldn't hear what you said there, sir. I'm sorry.
Okay. I'm putting on gloves to make myself extra safe.
I find that mask harder to hear through than the previous one.
I can raise my voice. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay. So the purpose of me being here today is as a police liaison officer, and I'm here to inform you that any gathering today, any assembly of people, and I assume, I may be here wrong, but I'm going to ask you, what's your intention? Why are you here today?
I'm sorry, sir, I don't want
Why
to have a conversation
are
with you.
Why are you here? What is your intention?
I don't wish to have a conversation with you.
I will inform you just to give you information that may be necessary or useful for you to make a decision as to your intention from this point onwards. Any gathering of any kind, any assembly of people.
Right, that's enough of that, but that's a bit like a superhero putting his mask on. I mean, the thing is, you've got to understand that policeman is in a completely different world to you at that point. He's in trance. He's seeing the world completely different. He has seen a dangerous world, and he thinks that he's in danger. I mean, he even puts gloves on to come closer to talk to you. He's actually going to talk to you and he puts gloves on. It's absolutely bonkers. And so that's what you have to realise is, you have to realise that these people are in a completely different world from you. Right. And this was one of the things that jumped at me earlier on as well, and it kind of leads on from the mask thing. And that is the, where did the virus come from? Bat or lab? And this hit me like a ton of bricks when I first started going around the media, when I heard it with my friends, was that everybody was talking about, where does it come from? Is it a bat or a lab? Right? Now, these are what I call, well, I don't call them, they are, they're cultural archetypes. They're basically stories that go across all cultures, and we understand. So we've already got them in a neurology, and they're memes, which means they're mind viruses. They can spread really quickly, and once they spread, they capture people's imagination. And this is the key: once they capture people's imagination, you can't get them out of your system, right? And so people would think about this: where did this virus come from? Now, I also noticed straight away that there was two origin stories. Right. And the reason I believe that they gave us two origin stories was because they gave us the illusion of choice. Right. Was it bat or a lab? Now, whenever I talk to people about propaganda, or whenever I talk to people about some of the stats and the research that's out there, people quite often they'll jump back to, the bat or lab argument. But basically what this is doing is, if you get involved in an argument like this, there is an inherent presupposition that this virus exists, so you won't go there and you won't question it. And this is a really powerful way of priming us, because this came out around about the same time they were showing us images on the TV of all these people in China just dropping out dead. So they were priming us, psychologically priming us before the virus even supposedly came over to this country. So that's just something to bear in mind. And like I said, it's something that really jumped out to me and stuck out like a sore thumb. The other thing I would also say, that the tier system is the same. The tier system doesn't exist. It's an imaginary thing, right? It doesn't exist. It's a construct. It's a construct. It's also a very good meme. It's a mind virus. It's easy. People take it on board really quickly. And what I noticed about the Scottish government was that they gave us these tiers with these different stats. Right, so we would be in tier three, dependent upon the number of cases that would be reported every night. But if we went below a certain threshold in the cases, we would then move into tier two. And what happened was quite often, well, it wasn't quite often, it did happen. We should have been in their tier two because the cases came down, but they didn't do it. So what did that do? It got people arguing with each other about the tier system. So whenever I was talking to people who were quite smart and quite alert, they would be awakening up to the fact that things aren't what they seem. But then all of a sudden they start to argue, but we should really be in tier two. We shouldn't be in tier three. And I don't know if this was done intentionally or what, but it wouldn't surprise me, because by getting people to argue about the tier systems, it was getting you to accept the tier systems. And if you accepted the tier systems, you were accepting the virus. So we're doing I'm not saying there isn't a virus, but what I'm saying is it's not what it seems. So it was a mechanism to get you to not question it and to embed the suggestions and the propaganda into your neurology even deeper. And there's another one where they were doing a contingent suggestion, and they were trying to link all this fear and this trance to an everyday activity running.
Someone jogging, walking their dog, or working out in the park is highly likely to have COVID-19. This is a national health emergency. Around 1 in 3 people have no symptoms and are spreading it without knowing. So exercise locally. If you're on your own, you can meet one other person. But keep your distance. Exercise, don't socialize, and wash your hands the moment you get home. Stop the spread. Stick to the rules. If you bend the rules, people will die. Stay home. Protect the NHS.
Right, so as you can see, probably the healthiest people you can be are people who are out jogging in the fresh air, and yet they're even trying to set that up as a trigger. So I'm hoping you're starting to see the patterns here.
Someone jogging, walking their dog, or working out in the...
Oops, bubble back one.
COVID-19, especially the new variant.
All right, okay, we'll go up one. Hold on. Right, and we'll just...
COVID-19, especially the new variant, is spreading quickly across the country.
Just a quick one here.
This puts many people at risk of serious disease and is placing a lot of pressure on our NHS. Once more, we must all stay home. If it is essential to go out, remember, wash your hands, cover your face indoors, and keep your distance from others. Vaccines give clear hope for the future, but for now, we must all stay home, protect the NHS, save lives.
Right, so I hope now you're starting to see these things scream out at you. It's starting to become really obvious. The next one I want to show you is a belter, as we say in Scotland, a belter. And what I mean by that is it's the closest you can get to hypnosis without actually being on stage, being a hypnosis. It's ridiculous.
The number of COVID patients is definitely going up. It's heartbreaking.
The patients this time are definitely sicker.
This is a real-life situation. This is serious.
We are seeing every day patients dying right in front of us.
I don't think that any of us realised just how challenging this wave was going to be.
When you have to tell somebody that you think this is the start of their lungs failing and that they're not going to get better, that is really, really heartbreaking.
They're doing everything to try and save them.
The worst time was 4 deaths in 2 hours.
It's atrocious, the worst any of us have ever seen.
12 days I've been here. My breath is still not coming back.
It's very dangerous to see.
The staff here have been really quite amazing.
They work long, long hours, but they just keep going. I don't know where they find their energy from.
24/7 care has just been out of this world, and we owe our NHS more than we could ever imagine.
If we don't do what we need to do, it's going to be here for a long time.
For those people who think this is not a serious illness,
they need to take a good look. This is scary as it gets. My mum was one of the disbelievers, and she's on the next floor up from here.
She is really terrible. I'm 38. I miss my family.
I really do understand that people are frustrated, and we've just got to keep going a little bit longer and follow the rules.
It's just really hurting people this time. It's very hard for everybody.
I saw so many people die here. It's heartbroken. It's very emotional for me.
Please do as we're asked. Wash your hands, wear your masks, keep a safe distance apart, and please, please do not go out unless you have to. If we don't do these things, people will continue to die.
Stay at home. Please stay at home.
And hopefully we'll get through this together.
Right, surely it has to be jumping out of you by now. Now, the thing about the hospitals, right, I don't watch much TV on the news, but I do know that they've been constantly pushing the NHS and showing you how things are bad on the news because I hear from it from family and friends. But just recently, there are lots and lots of freedom of information requests now going around the internet, going around Facebook, actual official freedom of information requests. And all of them are shown. I've got one, and it's actually on the Scottish Government website, and I'll put a link down below if anybody wants to have a look at it once this video is finished. But the Scottish Freedom of Information request is now on the government website, Scottish Government website, and it shows there was absolutely no excessive deaths in 2020 in Scottish hospitals. In fact, it was 10 years, over a 10-year period, there was only 1 year that had less deaths than 2020 in the hospitals. It was only 1 year that beat it. So I'm going to put that down there if you want to have a look at it. And I believe it was the same right across the UK, and I've got no reason to believe it's probably the same around the world, but this is in the UK and it's easy to check up. The excessive deaths, the people that died, were the majority of the deaths that died were people who stayed at home and they didn't get emergency treatment for heart attacks, for strokes, for diabetes. They didn't get a treatment for depression and ended up committing suicide. That's where most of the excessive deaths came. But even if you go and have a look in the ONS, you'll actually find is that death rates have been higher than the previous 5 years. But if you go back 20 years, what you'll find on the Office of National Statistics, the 2020 was the ninth worst year in the last 20 years, which makes it average. Okay, but these are stats that you can look up yourself if you really want to do that. I'll put a couple of links down below. You can make your own mind up. Now, I just came across this today, and I just thought I would throw this in really quickly. This is our First Minister of Scotland, for our friends overseas, and I just want to show you the latest advert that they have for their election campaign that's coming up in a couple of weeks. It's really quite relevant to what's happening.
It's been tough this last year. The COVID pandemic, the worry, the fear. It's made us all look again at what matters the most, what we care about, and the things we hold close. So here's a question. I mean, how much does the UK government care about you? This is a government Scotland didn't vote for, with philosophies and policies we can only abhor. Disability benefit cuts, food poverty, tax cuts for the wealthy, and for the rest of us, austerity. Where's the care there? Then there's Brexit, a forced exit that's dragging Scotland out of Europe against our will. We're already paying the bill, with future generations blocked from learning and working abroad. And our fishing industry betrayed, chucked right overboard. We never asked for it, but we're still getting it. Scotland is ignored by this Tory government. The Prime Minister, their master, claims devolution's a disaster and denies Scotland the choice to decide our own future. So who will care? When you see your mother, your father, your brother, your sister, your grandpa and nan, how can we get governments that care about them? The governments that we can trust to work tirelessly for Scotland, day after day after day. There is only one way. The governments that care most about Scotland will be Scottish governments, of whatever party, elected by the people of Scotland. Governments with all the powers needed to help us recuperate, restore, and regenerate after this pandemic. These powers come only with independence, and for that, we need to exercise our right to hold a referendum. A vote for the SNP will show Westminster and the world that we cannot, we will not, be denied our right to decide. As our country renews, we need to choose our own future before somebody else chooses it for us. So on May 6th, make it both votes SNP. Then we can take the first steps towards a new nation that's fair, a nation that cares. Scotland's future is Scotland's choice and nobody else's.
Right, now, I want to make a few points about this. The first point I want to make is I don't vote for any party, right? So I'm not taking any side with any politicians, but there's a few things I want to point out about the psychological manipulation that just went on there, and I think a lot of politicians do it. The first thing I had noticed about this advert, first of all, it's like a Big Brother advert. If you look at Sturgeon in the background there, she's very similar to the thing I was trying to portray in the posters of my stage shows, this Big Brother appearance. In fact, when the replay of this comes up, if you actually look at the 10-minute lead-in to the replay and the images that you see, that was the that was one of the things that I used in my Edinburgh Festival show in the Virgin Picture House. We had two big screens on each side of the stage, and it had my big face with the red eyes and the circles and music on people. So that's the first thing I noticed. The other thing I noticed about this advert, and it's like I said, it's very, very much like Dianetics. You know Ron L. Hubbard, the cult person? I remember going in to see Ron Hubbard's the Dianetics in Edinburgh, and I watched the documentary and read books about it afterwards. But one of their basic techniques is what they basically do is they try and find something that's really bad, right? And they amplify it, And then at the same time, what they do, they take everything that's good in life and they diminish it and they diminish it and they diminish it, diminish it. And then what they do is they offer you a way out. And if you look at that advert, that's exactly what's happening here right now. And the thing about this is it's almost like 1984. If you have a look at the big screen behind you, it's like 1984. And two things that jump out at me, two facts that jump out at me from that S&P advert is that it goes on about the fisheries were thrown away, the fishing waters, the fishing rights. When, and I'm not on Boris's side, I don't like Boris any more than I like Nicola. When Boris was putting forward as part of the Brexit plan that the Scottish fishing would be brought back to the UK, the SNP politicians voted against it. And secondly, they're going on and on about austerity. And if it's true what we're led to believe, we're about to move into one of the biggest depressions since the 1930s. And all of these politicians have had their part playing this. It doesn't matter if it's SNP, it doesn't matter if it's Tory or Labour, they've all had their part in it. That's the only political message I would like to put out there, because I wouldn't vote for any of them. So
it's been tough this last year.
So what time is it now? So what we'll do now then is, first of all, we've just covered these three things. Now, I know it isn't in any great depth, but this session is just designed to make you aware of what's happening. This last little part that we'll do another 10 or 15 minutes and we'll come up with some solutions to help you pull yourself out of the trance. So the reason why I want to do this part is because I know all this turmoil, all this constant media propaganda is tearing families apart, it's tearing friends apart, it's causing so much anxiety, it's causing so much worry. And what I'm going to try and do here, we're not going to accomplish it in this session, but what I'm going to try and do here is to start to offer a solution to pull us out of it. So the first thing to be aware of, right, there is such a thing in the world is called duality. And what I mean by that is that everything that exists has two ends of the spectrum. So, for example, we have night and day. Now, the only way nighttime can exist is if we have daytime. If we didn't have daytime, then nighttime couldn't exist, right? We have good and bad. The only way we know something is good is because there's bad. If we didn't have bad, we wouldn't have good. So we have two sides of the spectrum for just about anything, left and right, yin and yang, and it just goes on and on and on. Now, the thing is that these two ends of the spectrum have to exist, right? So, because what happens is if one end tries to eliminate the other end, it becomes a paradox. It becomes the thing it's trying to get rid of. So, for example, if you look at the world of politics in general right now, you have the extreme left side that want to get rid of fascism. So the first thing they do is they deplatform anybody that doesn't agree with them, and then they take away the freedom of speech. And then what happens is, in trying to eliminate what they see as fascists, they become the fascists. And that's just an example of duality, if you like. Right. Another one would be the science. We hear a lot about the science right now, but we're only allowed to listen to one type of science. So Boris and Sage are the only science we're allowed to listen to. So science has now become religion. It's trying to get rid of the faith. It's trying to become the science. And so it goes on and on and on. And then we also have the two groups of people, the conquer and divide, right? We have the people on one side who have really bought into the mainstream media version, and we have the people on the other side who have bought into the non-mainstream, the people who have done the research. They've went away and they've done the research and they've got other facts and figures from other scientific sources. And so what's happening is the people in the mainstream media side, they're absolutely terrified. They're in a trance because they think if they don't get vaccinated, if they don't stay at home, if they don't comply with the government, that everybody's going to die. And then we have the people on the other side who think they're awake, and they're trying to awaken the other side. And that's causing a lot of anxiety and a lot of anger between the two sides, because they think that they're awake. But in actual fact, they're just in a deeper trance is what they are. And the way that you know that you're in a trance is if you are in a peak emotional state, you're not thinking clearly. Because the people here are thinking they're going to be killed by the virus, and the people on this side, I think, are going to be killed by the political direction that we're being taken in. They've done research, and they know all about the World Economic Forum. They know all about what it means to bring a health passport and Chinese surveillance systems. So they're on this side, right? But they're in just as much of a trance as well, because these things haven't happened yet. But they're running them through their head constantly as if they've already happened. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to save the other side, and then the other side is trying to save their side. And so what happens is with family members and friends, they hit each other, they get loggerheads with each other, and they go into this state of anger, and they get angry and angry. Now, the thing is, when I'm teaching persuasion, like I said before, there's a sender and a receiver. And all that's happening here is that we're sending, the two sides are just sending anger at each other over and over and over, and they're just reinforcing each other's trances. In fact, they're compounding it up the way, and it's creating this conquer and divide effect. So what you need to do, no matter which side you happen to be on, you need to come out of that trance, you need to come out of that highly emotional state, and you need to calm down. And when you bring yourself down, then what you'll find is the people that you talk to will come down, and that's what you really need to do. And one of the ways you do it is you become aware of this duality, the fact that this duality is part of nature, it's a natural law, you can't escape it. So what you want to do is you want to step back and you want to transcend duality. You just want to step back and you want to observe it. So when you step back and you see it on social media, or you see it in arguments with among friends, you just go, oh, there's duality again. And when you are out of it and not part of it, you'll calm down, right? So that's the first thing, is you want to transcend duality. Right. The next thing is, I've got some prompts up here. It doesn't matter if you can't read it. They're really for me. The next thing is, you need to learn to accept there are things that you can change in your life, and there are things that you cannot. Right. So, for example, if you're really worried because a member of your family's taken the vaccination, well, they've taken the vaccination. Right. It could be a bad thing. It might not be a bad thing. We don't know for sure. We don't know for sure what's going to happen in the future. Right. So you've just got to accept it. Right. So it's resistance to what you can't change that causes all suffering. And I think that was Buddha that that actually said that. Hold on. I'll put that up here because I've got my camera here and I can't see it behind it. All learning. This is a learning experience for me. So this was a Christian prayer that I came across a while back, and it sort of sums it up. It says, God grant the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, and the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Well, so basically what this is saying is that you really have to accept what you can't change. If your friends or your families, if they have a different view on certain things that you have, or they've done certain things that you can't change, you've just got to accept it. And of course, the courage to think, because it doesn't mean that you don't change things, because there are certain things that you can work towards in the future and change. And of course, the courage to change the things that you can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Now, the last part, the wisdom to know the difference, is all about coming out of trance. It's all about getting in touch with a part of you deep inside yourself that knows what to do. So if you think about it, whenever your face is up against the wall and you really have to do something, somehow we always pull at the strokes, and we always do what we have to do. And that's because the mind and the nervous system is designed to operate out there and respond to what's happening. It's not designed to sit in an isolation and overthink. That's when things go wrong. That's when we start to get all worked up and we go into a trance. So to come out of trance and find out who you truly are, you need to get in touch with this part of who you truly are. You don't go into the past and you don't go into the future. You train yourself to be in the moment. And so this is what you need to do. You need to train yourself to be in the moment. Right, so here's my drawing skills coming to fore here, right? Oops. Right, so if you can imagine this is you. With bandy legs and clown feet. So this is you, and this is the world. World events. Through our five senses, we take data and from the world events. And we think that it's the world events that are affecting us emotionally, right? We think it's fear of killing your granny, for example, or fear of catching the virus, or we think it's maybe fear of the World Economic Forum or the health passports or a dystopian future that's unfolding before us, right? But in actual fact, all we are doing is collecting data and we are generating the experience ourselves. So from moment to moment, what you're experiencing inside your head, whether we're in the future or in the past, we are generating that experience ourselves along with the emotions. So it's impossible for these events to create what's happening inside us because there is no future. There really is no past. In reality, the only way you can be in touch with who you truly are is in the present. It's in this moment in time. So what you need to do is you need to fall out of your heightened imagination and your heightened emotions into the present moment. And you need to train yourself how to do it. And so one of the ways that you do that is it's not going to be covered here today, but what I want you to really just get from this last part is you need to be aware that whenever you feel this emotional state coming over you, and whenever you have this fear for what's going to happen in the future or the past, or whenever you have a meeting with a family member or a friend and you feel this coming over, what I want you to do is just step back and just observe it. And I want you to say to yourself, I'm not going to take part in this divide and conquer. I'm not going to take part in this divide and conquer. And really get used to the idea of duality and stepping back and just observing duality. Right. So I don't have much time to go into this in any great depth. I'm going to leave it there. I'm going to finish off with a thing I call the personal upgrade. Call it homework if you like, but what I want you to do is to note down these two questions, and I want you to ask them over and over again through the next few days and weeks. And the question I want you to ask, the first question I want you to ask is, if I was living life exactly the way I wanted it to, specifically within the restrictions at the moment, what would that look like? How would you be interacting with the people around you? How would you be dressing up? How would you be holding yourself? What kind of emotions would you be feeling? And really ask that question over and over and over and over, right? Until you start to get a real good, clear picture of what it is. And I want you to start taking time out during the day, continually asking that question over and over and over until you start to put a different program into your mind. And then the second question I want you to ask is, what's the one thing I need to let go in order to live life the way I would like to? What's the one thing you need to let go? And these two questions are the first step to the mental the roadmap, if you like, out of mental lockdown. So I'm just going to leave it there, right? If you want to ask any questions, you can ask them in the thread below. And I want to thank you all for turning up, and This has been a good learning experience for me, and hopefully I'll see you again. Okay, so see you again. Bye.